Welcome, everyone, to episode 195 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and we have a lot to talk about today. Got Dennis Smith Jr. trade rumors. We have James Harden continuing his supernova run, especially with Clint Capella now out. We have some Boston Celtics dysfunction and the Chicago Bulls holding Robin Lopez hostage. Before we get into all of that, a reminder, you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well, Brian. This is the earliest we've recorded a podcast together since, well, since you were in Denmark, actually.
This is. I know. Yeah, my wife had a MICU shift this morning. It started now, so I said, hey, why not? I'm up at 6:30. Why not actually record early?
I'm just glad, like, we just swapped size. Usually I'm up to, like, late in the night.
Yeah. Now, well, I'll be up late for real work, and then I might take a nap in the middle of the day. We'll see.
Well, you are old.
That's true. I know. Yeah. Grandpa Brian over here needs his two-hour naps.
A two-hour nap? Oh, my God.
Yeah, man. I don't understand people. Like, my wife could do this. She could nap for, like, 20 or 30 minutes and feel refreshed. If I'm napping, it is at least an hour and a half. I don't feel like these 20 or 30-minute power naps are just BS.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I can't do it.
Yeah. I mean, I've experienced it, like, my wife succeeds in actually getting me up after 20 minutes. Yeah. Then it takes me, like, 10 minutes, and then, oh, okay, I can actually feel the energy. But if she's not there and the clock rings after 20 minutes, I'm like, screw that.
Yeah.
Getting back in. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I don't even set an alarm. I'm just like, let's just let nature take its course.
Oh, well, that's a sentence you can't say when you have kids.
Right, exactly. This is the difference between you and I. You're responsible and have kids, and I do not.
Yeah. Notice that I didn't disagree.
Right, no. With all of that said, let's dive in. Well, let's start in Dallas, because news broke the other day from Adrian Wojnarowski and Tim McMahon of ESPN that the Dallas Mavericks are escalating talks to trade guard Dennis Smith Jr., pushing to end a partnership that has run its course for both the franchise and the former first-round pick. According to those two, Phoenix and Orlando have been active in talks with the Mavericks. John Gambadoro of Arizona Sports 98.7 had since come out and said Phoenix's interest is overstated. They're not actually that interested in Dennis Smith Jr. But, you know, we've been mentioning those two teams all year as, like, if a team needs a point guard, call Phoenix and Orlando, because those are the two teams that really need one. Before we get into this, though, a side plot that I'm really enjoying this season is John Gambadoro versus Woj. Because this is now the second time after the Marshawn Brooks, Dylan Brooks thing, where Gambadoro is like, no, Woj, like, I respect you, but you're totally wrong here.
This is how you build a name.
Right, right. But yeah. It's, like, really entertaining. I'm really enjoying this, like, low-key NBA Twitter feud that Woj is pissed about it.
Of course. Well, Woj, here's the thing with Woj, though. I mean, he wants his sources, obviously, to be accurate all the time.
Right.
But he is still a human being, and sometimes he will get bad intel.
Yeah.
And because he's a national guy and not, like, a local guy, there are always going to be certain elements that he's not privy to, like, where the beat writers will have some sort of insight that just trumps what he knows. I mean, as long as John isn't, like, O-ringer about it.
Right, like, right, right.
Then it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and also it's worth noting, like, all that Woj and McMahon reported are Phoenix has been active in talks. That might mean they, like, sniffed around and kind of just asked what Dallas wants in return, and maybe Dallas said, like, you know, we want Mikal Bridges, and Phoenix was like, okay, good luck finding someone else that will give you something that value for Dennis Smith Jr., and hung up, and that might be the end of it. That said, Mort, let's talk about first why the Mavericks are seemingly giving up on Dennis Smith a year after spending the number 9 overall pick on him, and then where he might make sense. So first, you know, is it just Luka? Is it just that, like, you know, they were really all in on Dennis Smith Jr. being their point guard of the future as of last year. And now is it just like they had this change of plans because this unforeseen circumstance of Luka Doncic falling into their laps? Now they're just like, screw it, we need to build around him. It makes no sense to have Dennis Smith Jr. here too.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I don't think that's the whole story. Mm. So, yeah, Dallas was absolutely very much in on Smith when they drafted him, and even during a, you know, a rookie season that wasn't great, but certainly had its moments. Mm-hmm. And I think they when Doncic was chosen, I think they looked at it at, and went, you know, we can't, you know, pair those two guys up and we'll see how it goes. Mm-hmm. Maybe everything clicks. Maybe Dennis Smith becomes a more willing passer. Maybe he, you know, develops into a really legitimate three-point threat that can space the floor for Luka. Maybe they can maximize each other's potential. So far, that hasn't really come true. And, you know, you always have a lot of data on a guy coming into an organization, but you never really quite know until the guy puts on a uniform and starts playing. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they anticipated that Luka would be this good this soon, to at least to the same extent. And they kind of realized, oh, you know what? We have an opportunity here to actually build around him very early on in his career. So we don't end up like New Orleans, where you're looking at a 25-year-old superstar, where we basically kept everything out. And, you know, we have good players around him, but we may not have the right players around him. Mm-hmm. And they're looking at this situation from a very serious point of view, going, how do we maximize, you know, Luka Doncic's potential? And then they just identified Dennis Smith Jr. as a player who might not be a long-term asset that they project as the best sort of teammate to put next to Luka in terms of playing style. I don't think they have a problem with him personally. Right. I think it's all about, like, the on-court fit. And when you look at it, like, it makes sense because Luka has the ball a lot. He's a playmaker slash scorer, and you don't really need a guy at the point guard position whose entire, let's put it this way, like his entire world view is getting to the basket and scoring or shooting. Like, you need a guy who can be like the secondary playmaking initiator, and a guy who can space the floor. And those two are just not in Dennis Smith's wheelhouse, at least not right now. And here's the thing: if that doesn't materialize, then he loses trade value. Mm-hmm. So Dallas is looking at it from a very proactive point of view, where they're going, you know what, he has trade value right now. He's so young that a lot of teams would be willing to take him on and actually pay up quite a price to get him. So they're trying to get the best of both worlds. They're trying to move an asset that has significant value and get something in return, or at least get the financial flexibility in return, to find an alternative that suits Luka better. It's a win-win for them on the long term.
Yeah, totally agree. I mean, we were looking at NBA.com and like their on-off stats with Luka and Dennis Smith Jr. So when the two of them share the court together, they play 27 games together, average about 25 minutes a game. When they're on the court together, the Mavs have a net rating of minus 5.0. The offensive rating is like just under 101. Defensive rating is at 106. When Luka is alone without Dennis Smith Jr., the Mavs are plus 3.1 overall, have an offensive rating of 110.6, defensive rating of 107.5. So defense is a little worse, but the offense is nearly 10 points per 100 possessions better.
Which is significant.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I think you're right in that ideally, I guess a guy, you know, Luka is one of those guys where he's an unconventional playmaker ball handler in the sense that, like, you don't necessarily expect this 6'8"?
Yeah, 6'7", 6'8", just about.
So you don't expect him to be able to be your full-time ball handler, just like you don't expect Ben Simmons in Philly to be a full-time ball handler, just like you don't expect a guy like Nikola
LeBron.
LeBron, or like a guy like Nikola Jokic in Denver to be able to run your offense through him most of the time. But when you have those rare guys where you're able to, you need to build around them. Like, you know, we've talked about that with Denver, especially how they've maximized Jokic by putting two shooters and especially Jamal Murray at the point guard position, where he doesn't need to be a full-time playmaker. His main asset to Denver is his shooting ability. So,
right.
As you said, like, you know, Dennis Smith Jr. was not efficient at all as a rookie. He shot 39.5% overall, 31.3% from three. Mm-hmm. This year, he's been better, 44.3 overall, 37.5 from three, but he's taking fewer than four threes a game. I mean, that was not his wheelhouse coming into the NBA. Shooting was not, right. You know, that was not a strength of his. It was his athleticism is, that's the big one. So you want a guy, ideally, who's a better shooter than that next to Luka, who is going to find open shooters plenty. And, like, you also don't necessarily need a Dennis Smith Jr. when Luka Doncic is your main crunch time guy. Like, Luka has proven himself repeatedly this season as, you know, one of the better crunch time scorers in the NBA, like, the entire league, which is wild. So, I think you're right. I think the Mavs are like, all right, Dennis Smith Jr. is in, not even through his second full season. If we trade him now, whichever team acquires him will have two more seasons on his rookie contract before they have to make any big decisions. As you said, he's still young enough where I don't think this is like a Michael Carter Williams situation where, you know, Philly was like, all right, we're going to trade him halfway through his second season because he's not that good. And like, we just want to get an asset for him before the rest of the league realizes it. Like, I don't think that's the case. I think Dallas is aware that Dennis Smith Jr. is going to be at least an above average, if not good player. And like, is likely to carve out a long-term NBA career. It's just,
you know, right. The potential is there for it.
Yeah, for sure.
Is what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, again, you have to pivot if an unexpected circumstance happens and Luka Doncic is that unexpected circumstance. So let's go into where he might make sense.
Is this where we should say that we actually recorded a 100-minute podcast on Luka Doncic specifically?
We did. Yeah. For your patron. And that was, we were talking about guys who would make sense, who makes sense to like plug around him. And then we got into the whole, like, is Dennis Smith that guy? I'm not sure. That's probably your best trade asset if you're Dallas, though. So if you're, like, really looking to find, you know, an asset to, like, a long-term asset to plug next to Luka, Dennis Smith Jr. is your best chance of getting it via trade.
Right. And we identified one guy in particular.
We did.
A guy we like a lot.
Yep.
And he's not a point guard.
Nope.
He's a power forward, at least when the Magic decides to play him as the power forward.
Right.
And he needs to be freed.
Yes.
Unleashed, yep. However you call it. So a trade that is centered around, you know, Aaron Gordon and Dennis Smith Jr. And to his credit, you know, Sean Hygen actually, for Bleacher Report, came up with a bunch of names. That was after we recorded our podcast. And I know Sean does not support my patron, the bastard. So,
right.
Well, that's a joke, obviously, because it's in Danish.
Right, exactly.
Right. But, you know, it just makes sense, is my point. Like, several people are looking at this going, you know what? Eric Gordon needs to be freed.
Right.
And looking at Dallas, you know, Dirk Nowitzki is not going to stick around for much longer.
Right.
So there's going to be an open spot at the four.
Yep.
And Aaron Gordon, to his credit, is an improving playmaker. He's a versatile defender. He's an improving shooter. And he's athletic as all hell, meaning he can run the floor with Luka all night long. And not just in a pick-and-roll sense, but also pick-and-pop, because, you know, he does take four threes a game.
Right. Yeah, I mean, to me, if Phoenix is really out on Dennis Smith Jr., then Orlando is like the obvious landing spot for Dennis Smith Jr. And I think the good thing is there are multiple trades you can come up with if you're Orlando and Dallas. Like, it depends what Dallas wants in return. If they're looking to dump Wes Matthews, that's how you get to Aaron Gordon, just because salary matching wise, you can't do Dennis Smith Jr. for Aaron Gordon straight up. Aaron Gordon's making like 20 some million dollars a year.
21 and a half because he signed the contract last summer.
Right. And then the good thing about Gordon is his contract descends every year.
Correct.
Which makes him, you know, for team building purposes, that makes him a more attractive asset because most guys escalate. His is going to de-escalate, in which case, you know, every other player is going to have an escalating contract. It's going to make it easier to build around Luka and still be able to get more talent in elsewhere. So
right, because in 2021, Brian, mm-hmm. he's only going to earn $16.4 million.
Yeah.
And if he is going to be that guy we all think he can be in a system that unleashes him, mm-hmm. then you might have a 20.8 rebound with good defense player, which is like an all-star caliber player.
Right.
For, you know, a salary that's crazy under market value.
Yeah.
And with Luka still being on a rookie scale, like that's when you need to strike. That right. It would just make so much sense for Dallas to go after Aaron Gordon.
Yeah. That would be... what, half of what he's likely... if he was a free agent in 2021, if Aaron Gordon was a free agent in 2021, he'd probably earn double that if he breaks out yeah. the way we expect him to once he gets correct. Out of Orlando.
So right, because even this contract he's on now, the four-year 76, mm-hmm. is actually pretty cheap.
Yeah, like relatively for sure. So yeah. that's one option. Another one, if you're still trying to do Orlando and Dallas, Mo Bamba.
Oh, I'm not there.
Yeah, no?
Not yet. No, I think they need something more established. Like, Mo Bamba, I like the potential, but he's still a gamble. You don't know what he is. You know what Aaron Gordon is to mm-hmm. some extent. Right now, like, let me just look it up. Bamba is playing less than 17 minutes a game.
Right.
And he's played, you know, 39 games. Like, obviously, you know, I've seen games with him where, you know, it's very inconsistent. Mm-hmm. Like, he can have games where he just, you know, finds his defensive rhythm and he blocks shots and grabs boards and, like, hits threes on the other end. And then you have games where he's just completely unplayable mm-hmm. and you need to sit him down. And that's, obviously, that's common for a 20-year-old. But I think with Luka and the amount of, you know, dedication that Dallas have to Luka and his development, mm-hmm. you need to have something in there that is just more certain, I want to say.
That's fair. I mean, yeah, it depends, A, on what Orlando is asking for. Like, if they say, you know, Aaron Gordon, we're not going to trade unless you give us a pick along with Dennis Smith Jr., and Dallas says no, but Orlando says, we'll give you Dennis Smith Jr. for Mo Bamba straight up. You know, it depends on, like, the parameters of all of these deals. My thought with Bamba is just that, like, A, he's really young. You won't have to plug him in right away because you still have DeAndre Jordan for the rest of this year, at least. It also depends right. on whether Dallas fancies itself a playoff contender or is like, you know, screw it. We think we're going to get knocked out of this playoff race at some point. It doesn't matter if we get a project in Bamba because... you know, we're willing to be patient and wait a couple of years before we really start going hard after the playoffs. Now, I would think...
well, see, that's the one I'll challenge, though.
Okay.
Because of Luka. Like, Luka's already there.
Right. And I would think they would want to... like, realistically, this is probably Dirk's last season. Yes. I don't think they want to, you know, go into the tank in the second half of what is likely to be Dirk's last season.
Oh, undoubtedly not.
Yeah.
Undoubtedly. So, I mean,
I would think they would prefer Aaron Gordon in this situation.
I think they should prefer him, even if you look at it from a production perspective, because again, we're looking at an Aaron Gordon and we're judging him solely off the Orlando system where he's been jerked around since his rookie season.
Yeah.
Like, this guy's talent is tremendous. Mm-hmm. And he is one of those guys who have flown under the radar for years because Orlando. Like, right. Who talks about Orlando? Nobody. Orlando right. is, by all intents and purposes, the most irrelevant NBA team right now.
Yeah.
Like, they just don't matter at this point. Everything they've done for, you know, the past 5 or 6 years has just been horrid. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's their one bright spot. But, again, no one is paying attention to that bright spot. He's losing, you know, patience by the hour, I would imagine. And going to, like, could you imagine him just balling out for Dallas because he just got him out of that situation?
Yeah, to me, he's like, he could put up Blake Griffin numbers. Maybe not what Blake yeah. Griffin's doing this season, but like in his prime, it would not surprise me if he puts up somewhere in the low to mid 20s scoring, 10 rebounds a night, and I think he could average 5 assists a game. I don't see why not.
Yeah, you know what I've called Gordon for years.
Yeah.
You know, I called him the athletic Draymond Green.
Yeah.
I think he can handle the ball. I think he can initiate plays. And that's also another part of it, because Dennis Smith Jr. right now is not one of those, you know, playmakers.
Right.
He's averaging more or less as many turnovers per game as he is assists. Mm-hmm. I mean, roughly. Aaron Gordon, like, he can pass from when he's outside the three-point line. He can pass from the post. Like, and Luka can cut.
Right.
Like, he's a willing passer. He's not one of those guys that needs to take X amount of shots.
Right.
And I think the intricacies between him and Luka would just fit so well together on the court. Because you have, obviously, Gordon is an alley-oop target, mm-hmm. which, you know, means that you have to key in on him, giving Luka more space to operate. But at the same time, you also have this thing where if Gordon has the ball, like, on the block or in the mid-range area, and he's looking to attack, like, teams will look at it and go, oh, here we have this 6'9 guy who can dunk on four guys at once. We actually right. need to look at him for a change. And that's just going to give Luka the ability to move under the radar. He moves very well without the basketball, and with Gordon being able to survey the court the way that he does, you know, you could totally see a lot of cross-court passes that ends up like with like corner frees with Luka. Like yeah. there are several ways you can build around Luka, but I think having a big man who is as versatile as Gordon and also has more talent, you know, to squeeze out from off of his potential, that's just a solid gamble all the way through. Not saying that Mo Bamba is a bad target. Not right. saying that at all. I think he will be a good player. It's just he's an unknown commodity.
Mm-hmm.
And Gordon, while while he is a known commodity, there is still a certain element to him where he could become more.
Well, I mean,
there's no scenario where he becomes less.
Look at Victor Oladipo. We thought we knew who he was after 4 years in Orlando. It seemed like he stagnated. It seemed like he stagnated 1 year in OKC. Then he goes to Indiana and has this breakout all-star year.
Right.
Like, it would not surprise me if Aaron Gordon, the second he gets out of Orlando, and the second he's allowed to play power forward full-time because he's a power forward, if he has a similar kind of breakout. Also, he's only 23. He hasn't turned 24 until September. So
right. So he fits with Luka's age group. Yeah.
Right. Right. Exactly. The one thing...
Oh, that's a good... You actually made a point. You actually made a point about this mm-hmm. on the podcast we shot together regarding Luka's age. You actually came up with the point that when building around Luka, you should actually make sure that there is like a bubble surrounding him in terms of, you know, average age. Mm-hmm. Like there shouldn't be more than a 5 year age difference.
Right. At least with like long term pieces. I mean, if you're
right
filling in 1 year stop gaps, whatever. But
of course.
Yeah.
But like from the core.
Right, right. Yeah. One thing I will say about Dennis Smith Jr. is I know this report will have a lot of people like ready to give up on him. And I just think in general we're like way too quick to give up on young point guards. Like it happened with D'Angelo Russell. It happened with De'Aaron Fox after his rookie season. People were just like out on him being a good player. Like
it's, well, wait, they were?
Yeah.
I didn't even notice that.
Oh, yeah.
De'Aaron Fox? Yeah, yeah. I know Russell. Oh.
Because he just didn't
why?
Shoot.
Why? I was so encouraged. Well. But we knew this coming in, and he shot a lot better than he did in Kentucky. I was very optimistic. I had him, like, second on my big board.
Yeah. I was optimistic after his rookie season, too. But it just seems like, in general, like, if a guy doesn't hit the ground running right away, NBA Twitter is just like, bust, trash. Like, give these guys time. Dennis Smith Jr. is going to be fine.
Yeah, I think he's going to be fine too. It's just a matter of him getting the right system and, you know, becoming a better shooter. And as you said, like that is slowly becoming a thing, like 37.5%.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine. He just needs to add the volume to it and maintain that percentage, and he's going to be okay.
Yeah, totally agree.
Yeah.
All right, let's move to Houston, where Clint Capella is now out for 4 to 6 weeks with ligament damage to his right thumb, according to Adrian Wojnarowski.
Yeah.
They are still without Chris Paul. They just lost Daniel House, who's been starting for them, because he couldn't reach an agreement. He was on a two-way contract, and they couldn't reach a long-term agreement. So unless they do, he is back in the G League, and he is not allowed to rejoin the team until after the Rio Valley Grande Vipers season is over, which I think is late March, unless they make the playoffs, which is even later. So basically, right now, Houston is the James Harden show.
Yeah.
And yet, they keep winning. They are now fourth in the West, or tied for fourth in the West with Houston. They're 4.5 games back of the Warriors. We mentioned James Harden last episode because you were catching me up on things I missed while I was in Japan.
Yeah.
We need to talk more about James Harden and what he's done. I think we should.
Yeah.
So I looked at, you know, he's riding a 17-game streak in which he has scored 30-plus points every game. The last time he did not score 30 was on December 11th when he scored 29. Slacker. In these 17 games, he is averaging 41.3 points, 9.2 assists, 7.5 rebounds, 5.8 threes on 38.5% shooting from deep, 2.1 steals, 0.7 blocks. Houston is 13-4 in those games. When he started this, the first game he got 30. Or like the first of these 17 straight that he got 30 was against the Lakers on December 13th. Going into that game, the Rockets were 12-14. We were all like, what the hell happened to the Rockets? Why are they so bad?
Yeah.
Now, I mean, he had 57. He single-handedly beat the Memphis Grizzlies on Monday night. Or Sunday night? Monday night. Like, what... I mean, not only is what he's doing completely ridiculous, and we're going to have a longer awards pod soon since we're now at the halfway point of the season, but Mort, I'm suddenly feeling nervous about our Giannis pick for MVP.
I think you should. I mean, right now, Harden is looking, you know, every bit the player that we all thought he was, and, you know, returning MVP, and obviously. So what I find interesting are two things. Mm-hmm. One, let's look at the way that he actually produces points, okay? Mm-hmm. So he takes 12, and I'm listing this in order of volume. The primary shot method is the three-point shot. Mm-hmm. 12.8 attempts per game. The second most is three throw attempts at 11.3. And then we have the third most in two-point field goal percentage at 10.3. Dude, I mean, this is analytical basketball at a very, very high level.
Yeah.
This is a mathematician's approach to basketball.
Right.
It really is. And the result of it, this is my second point, is when you look at his per 36 numbers, like he's scoring 33.7 points per 36. Mm-hmm. That is higher than any per 36 scoring number Michael Jordan has ever had.
So wild. It's just so wild. And I mean,
and you know, whenever you are able to put Mike into that conversation,
right,
you're doing something right.
Yeah. Like, part of it, to be fair, is he's taking a much, much higher volume of 3-point attempts than Mike ever did. So,
like, yes, that is like 10 more.
Right. So, I mean, that's part of it. We're not going out on the same limb that Daryl Morey is and saying James Harden's the greatest offensive player who's ever lived.
Yeah, not there yet.
Yeah. But what he's doing this season is just remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the crazy part, is he has a chance to keep it up. Because here are the next 7 games for Houston.
Mm-hmm.
They're home against the Nets tonight.
Win.
They're against the Lakers at home on Saturday.
Win.
And LeBron James has already been ruled out for that game. They're at Philly on Martin Luther King Day.
Toss up.
It's a win. But Philly can't defend guards. Harden's getting... He's getting 60 that game.
I know, but there's no Capella.
Yeah.
So Joel Embiid is going to get like 50.
That's probably true.
And here's the thing. There is a Harden stopper in this league, and his name is Jimmy Butler.
Mm.
Jimmy Butler has historically done extremely well against Harden. Maybe not when you I haven't looked up the numbers, so I have no idea what the numbers are, but I have seen like the vast majority of those matchups, and he gets into the head of Harden a lot. He has that game circled, so I think that's a, I mean that's a toss up.
Okay, toss up, but Harden's still scoring 50.
Right.
What next Wednesday? They're at the Knicks.
That's the 60-pointer.
Right. Yeah. Probably
The Garden.
Yeah. At the Garden, and the Knicks have one of the worst defenses in the league.
Then, that's the 60-pointer.
Then they have a 3-game homestand. Toronto, which is actually a tough game.
Yeah, toss-up.
Orlando.
Oof.
And then New
another
Orleans.
Another 60.
New Orleans.
That's probably a win, but good Lord. I mean, that's I'm looking forward to that game, January 29th against New Orleans. Like,
yeah.
He's going to have like 45 and AD's going to have like 44 or something. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Very much looking forward to that.
He's going to like this. I don't think this 30-point streak stops anytime soon.
Right.
Like in part because he's going to have to. Like, it looks like Eric Gordon is questionable tonight, so he might actually come back, but Chris Paul is still out. Capella is now out for through the All-Star break.
Mm-hmm.
So they're still going to be down two starters no matter what. If Gordon is out or if he... I mean, regardless of whether Gordon returns or not, who else do you have? Especially with House now gone too. It's like James Harden, Austin Rivers... Gerald Green, Austin Rivers, PJ Tucker. That's it. Harden's taking 30 shots a game from here on out.
Yeah.
He has to.
Oh, yeah. Including like 17 threes at the least.
Yeah. I mean, he has attempted at least 15 threes in each of his past 7 games.
Well, I mean, for a guy averaging almost 13 3-point field goal attempts.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, and it's just...
Oh.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt. I just had a thought.
Mm-hmm.
James Harden might actually become... I should say, the first player in NBA history to attempt 1,000 threes in a season.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, because he's on pace for it.
Yeah, he has it 5-12, 40 games.
Sort of pace.
Yeah, well, I mean, if he continues at this rate.
Right, he only missed 3 games, so if he stays healthy for the rest of the season and he ups it up just a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, that number's right there.
That's wild. Oh my God. Yeah, because he led the league with 722 last year in 72 games. He's at 512 through 40 games this year.
Right. And you only need, like, when you play a full season, the rule of thumb if you average 12.2 of something, then you crack the 1,000 mark.
Okay. And he's at 12.8.
He's at 12.8 and missed 3 games. Yeah. So it's right there for the taking if he just keeps it up.
And he's going to have to, out of necessity... At least until Chris Paul returns.
And you know he's going to have one game at least over the next 7 games where he's going to jack like 25 threes. You just know it.
Probably against Philly.
Could be.
Knowing how Philly has defended guards all year.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like this is just like the stats fun land.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a testament to him. That he is this good, that, I mean, opponents know what's coming. Like, you know that all he's going to do is take those step back threes, and yet you still can't stop him.
Right.
I read The Athletic had a piece yesterday because, you know, it was Dario and Covington's first game back in Philly since the trade. So it was a piece about Dario. And apparently, in his rookie season, they talked to Lloyd Pierce, who is now the head coach of Atlanta. He was the defensive coordinator for Philly before. And in Dario's rookie season, they were playing Houston. And Houston kept trying to get mismatches for Harden. And they kept picking on Dario. And apparently, Dario goes back to the huddle at one point and is just, like, so mad. And he's like, what do I even do against this guy? We don't have players like this in Europe. And Lloyd Pierce says, well, we don't have players like this here either. I don't know. There's nothing you can do. And like,
that's great.
That anecdote really just sums up James Harden, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Because I mean,
it really does.
Like, he gets a lot of hate because, you know, he flails and flops and draws a lot of free throws. But, like, we talked about this with regard to Embiid, too. Like, that's just smart.
It is.
More players should try to do that.
Yeah. I mean, look, he's the thing he's getting hate for is, I guess, aesthetics.
Yeah.
Like, it's not pleasant to watch is the argument people use.
Right.
You know, I don't think you can use that. I was about to say it's an excuse. I don't know if it's an excuse, but I get the whole getting to the line a ton can be, you know, free throws aren't fun to watch. I get that.
Right.
And then there are a lot of people going on the, like, the anti three pointers wave going, well, threes aren't fun.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. It's not just him spotting up. Like, you mentioned it. Like, it's the step backs. It's the fact that he can hit threes with, like, two hands in his face. Like, how is that not entertaining?
Right.
Like, of course it is. Like, that's just hate. That's just raw hate for no reason.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of it is really this, I think, understanding that James is attacking the game from an analytical point of view. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously coming off the top of Morey Ball and all that. And I think fans want basketball and sports overall to be a more intuitive, emotional experience.
Right.
So when you put a logical approach to it, it's like, well, I'm okay, I'm out. I don't want to watch this. I want to watch something that's intuitive. And in that case, let me suggest go watching Russell Westbrook.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't an NBA player's entire point to win games and win championships?
Yes.
Like, what, it is. And what Harden's doing is winning basketball.
Well, and not just Harden. Like, listen, here's the thing. This was just never publicized as much. LeBron James.
Yeah.
Very, very much analytically inclined. Especially in Miami. It started in Miami.
Right.
He and Wade had a competition about who has the highest field goal percentage. I know field goal percentage is a very faulty measure. But, like, you know, it was 2010. And it was, like, the beginning of the awareness of efficiency.
Yeah. And they were both trying to shoot above 50% from the field, which is, like, faulty.
55, I think it was. Yeah. I think that was their goal going in, 55.
Which I would argue for perimeter players especially, that's not really a faulty premise. Like, if a perimeter player is shooting that well, that speaks volumes about how well they're playing. Also, like, LeBron, I mean, ever since coming into the league, that's, like, attacking the rim and drawing free throws has been a primary source of offense for him, too.
Absolutely.
Like,
but, you know, you don't hear that, you know, about LeBron. Oh, he's, I mean, well, actually, you hear from me that he's boring to watch, but that's just because it's the same, you know, play overall. He's not the creative type. Unless I love to watch him pass.
Right.
But in terms of the scoring, it's very much the same bully ball.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But I get that. I get the whole thing. I mean, you know, I get the critique. I don't buy into it with Harden. I mean, because look at what he's got to work with.
Right.
Paul is out. Capella is out. Like, the team going into the season was somewhat thin because Ariza was going, you know, to Phoenix and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have to look at the wholesome package here. You have to look at the entire picture. You have to look at context. You have to look at the narrative of it. Like, what Harden is doing right now is bonkers. Like, they've only lost 18 games. Like, they didn't start off right. I think they lost, like, the first, correct me if I'm wrong, was the first five out of six.
Yeah.
Four out of five, something like that. Yeah, they started really bad, and then, you know, the whole narrative flipped on them, and, oh, they're not as good, and you know, but you have to look at the context, though.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't ready. They lost huge vehicles of what, you know, made them a 65-win team the year before.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Do you think they dust off Carmelo Anthony?
So here's my question. Is he officially waived?
No, I think he's still on the roster. I think he's still on the roster.
I mean, honestly, I would actually go to him and go, "You know what? We had our differences. But look at the team right now. You would have an opportunity to shoot like 15 times."
Right. Also play center, because we don't want to rely on Nene and Marquise Chris.
Yeah. No, but I mean, at the end of the day, Carmelo's frustration was, you know, volume and role, right?
Right. Yeah, now's the chance, at least for the next couple games until Gordon and Chris Paul are back.
Oh, you know what? He's going to say it's beneath him to become like a replacement player.
Right, right. Oh, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right. No, but it, like, logically, it would make a lot of sense.
Yeah. I was only like half kidding when I suggested that.
I know, but like, it does make sense.
Yeah. All right, let's turn to the East now. We have to talk about the Boston Celtics, who, if we're talking about underwhelming teams this year, we all thought Boston was just going to be, you know, go bananas, be right in the thick of the Eastern Conference, you know, race for the top seed. They're 25-18. They are seven games behind the Toronto Raptors. It seemed like they were hitting their stride a little bit at the start of the year. They ran off four straight wins against Minnesota, Dallas, Brooklyn, and Indiana. They then dropped three straight road games to Miami, Orlando, and Brooklyn. And some of the fractures of this team really started to pop up in recent days. Jaylen Brown and Marcus Morris had to be separated during a timeout in Miami. They downplayed it afterwards. That was no big deal. After the loss to Orlando, Kyrie Irving comes out and basically just blasts his young teammates. Says they understand what it takes to win a championship. You need to prepare the same way every day. A lot of these guys have been riding on their talent, and you can't do that. He basically sounded like LeBron James, which I... You know.
No, Jimmy Butler.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess because he was...
And those are boys. Those two guys are boys and talked about teaming up. Yeah. Just saying.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah, both of them would go to the Clippers this offseason. It's going to be great.
Yep.
Yeah, but so he comes out and, you know, puts his young teammates on blast. Then they go out Monday, lose to the Brooklyn Nets. Jaylen Brown afterward comes out and says, it's not one guy's fault. It's not young guys, old guys. It's everybody. We all have to be accountable and turn this thing around. Which is basically a subtweet at Kyrie for saying,
"Right,
look, man, it's not just me and Tatum and Smart and Rozier. It's you and Horford and Hayward and all the older guys, too."
It's a big screw you to Kyrie. Yeah.
So what do you think's going on with Boston this year? Because, like, we've gotten past, you know, we're now halfway through the season. We're past the, like, it's just small sample size. They're going to figure it out. They still have 40 games to figure it out. Like, I'm not pressing the panic button on Boston. I still think the Sixers would have no chance against them in a playoff series. But, like, they definitely are not the team we thought they would be coming into the year. What's happening?
What happened was our worst fears became true.
Yeah. The disease of me.
The disease of me. The fact that you had to incorporate, you know, two high-volume players back into a team that made it so far in the playoffs off of, you know, the element of surprise to some extent. And, you know, Jason Tatum was unequivocally the star of that team.
Yep.
And that's not a role he could... of course, he's got the talent to take that role this year. He just... He couldn't because there wasn't enough shots to go around, not enough possessions, and like Kyrie had to come back. A lot of focus was on Gordon Hayward coming back. Jaylen Brown was suspected to take a leap forward. You know, Marcus Morris started playing really well. Like, everything just kind of overshadowed Tatum. And for some reason, he started taking a lot of weird shots. Like, Tatum, like a lot of long twos and just... was more or less the opposite of what we just talked about regarding Harden, like analytically inclined. But I just want to take a break and talk about Kyrie for a second, because here's the thing. A lot of people are pointing fingers at Kyrie for not being the player that he used to be, like scoring, you know, the ball 25 points a game or whatever. So the Kyrie Irving I'm watching this year is actually significantly better than we've seen in the past, even though his numbers are a little bit down. He's averaging 22.7 and 6.4 assists.
Yeah.
Here's why. His basketball IQ has grown exponentially, and I think Brad Stevens has a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
He is just a flat-out smarter basketball player than he's ever been. And I get that people look at the stats and go, well, you know, he's not as great as... No. Forget all about that. It has nothing to do with it. Watch him play. This is 100% eye test going in.
Yeah.
This dude just makes better plays, smarter plays, moves better without the basketball, puts himself in a more, you know, high efficiency scoring position, puts himself into more smarter position of not getting out of rhythm, like defensively, just, you know, switching over to the wrong player. Like, he's in the right spot more or less now compared to the years prior. I'm in awe of the internal improvements of Kyrie Irving. Like, he's still not a good defensive player by any stretch, but he's becoming that type of guy who's understanding, oh, I can still have a functional role in team defensive schemes. Yeah, he'll get burned on one-on-ones because he's just not built to defend one-on-ones. But in team structures, he's doing fine.
Right.
And I really believe that he is greatly improved, and people are sleeping on that improvement because the numbers don't really suggest he's improved. You know, you catch my drift?
No, yeah. I 100% agree. And it, like, you want to know why his numbers aren't where they were in Cleveland. I mean, they are, honestly. Aside from his last season in Cleveland, he's putting up very similar numbers to what he did before, but he's playing three fewer minutes a game, which is smart. Like, you have this wealth of talent and depth. It would be reckless to play him 37 minutes a game. Like, you don't need to. So, I mean, that, if you're looking at just, like, his per-game numbers, that explains why his scoring is down. But if you look at it on a per 36 basis, he set a career high last year. This year, he's right in line with his 2016-17 season in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
He's averaging a career high number of assists.
Rebounds. I mean, steals.
Yeah.
Blocks. Yep.
Like, you're right. He's playing better than ever. Would you like him to draw more free throws? Absolutely.
Yes. Like, but he's never been that guy.
Right.
Like, for some reason, and that's always been like the major drawback from Kyrie. He's never been the type of guy to get to the line seven times a game.
Right.
Even though he absolutely should. That's one thing. I don't think that changes like right now.
Right. I agree. Yeah. And I mean, part of it is like there's no one on the Celtics drawing a lot of free throws. That maybe it's just their motion offense is like they don't. They're just trying to create open shots. They're not necessarily relying so much on drives, which is where you're, you know, oftentimes drawing fouls. Like that.
I think right, and I think their best bet should be Jason Tatum, like 6'8", yeah, 6'8", 6'9", slick, strong, athletic, can slash, handles the ball well enough to get into the teeth of the defense. Like, I think he is being used in a way where, yeah, he's obviously a very essential component to that movement offense, and he'll take and make three-pointers, and, you know, he's an offensive viable option. Mm-hmm. But I do think there is a way where you can maximize him even more, where, yeah, you may have to sacrifice some of the ball movement.
Right.
But if you can squeeze out maybe a little bit more free-throw attempts and getting teams into, like, you know, tough situation fouls-wise, that's probably worth it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think...
And I'm not suggesting that Brad Stevens is a bad coach, by the way.
Right.
So don't add me, Boston fans.
I hear he's about to get fired, actually. I don't know. I hear he's coaching for his job. I mean, there's another reason for Boston's struggles, and it feels wrong to say this to some extent, but, like, we also have to be realistic. Mm. Gordon Hayward's on a max deal.
Yeah.
He's averaging 10.9 points a game. He's shooting 42 overall, 32.5% from three. Like, yes, he's coming back from a traumatic injury, and it's unfair to expect more from him.
Mm-hmm.
But that's still, like, this is not the Gordon Hayward that Boston thought they were getting. Gordon Hayward in Utah his last couple seasons was a 20.5 rebound, 4 assists per game guy. He's half of that right now. He has games. You know, he had, like, the 35-pointer against Minnesota in the beginning of this month. He has 16-11-8 the next game against Dallas. Like, he shows those flashes. But then, you know, the last three games, he's averaged 5.7 points, 2.7 assists, 2.3 rebounds, shooting 32 overall. He's hit.
Yeah.
1-3 on 9 attempts.
So we talked about this coming into the season.
Yeah.
Like, we said, let's give him a year.
Right.
And this is the year we're giving him. But absolutely, like, you know, you have to make observations at certain point.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the meantime, and right now, the return is, you know, like you said, there it's okay, but it's not great. It's mm-hmm. not looking as if he's going to be like the Gordon Hayward necessarily of old.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the progress on from here on out? Is it, you know, him needing to restructure the way that he plays? Is it him finding out, you know, how can I be an efficient basketball player without necessarily being a 20-point scorer? Like, right. He needs to probably adjust certain things. And then next season, I could imagine him coming in more confident, mm-hmm. having a little bit more faith in his body. I will say this, the rebounding and the assist numbers are actually pretty optimistic.
Yeah.
Like, 5 boards, 3.5 assists in 26 minutes. That's I'm all the way down with that. That's nice.
Mm-hmm.
It's solely the way that he moves offensively from a scoring perspective. Like, in Utah, he was able to really create separation for himself.
Yeah.
And he just has not been able to do that on a consistent level this year. So you really have to gauge, is this the Gordon Hayward moving forward from an offensive perspective? Or is that just him getting back to his normal self?
Right.
And, you know, we're not doctors, your wife are, but you're right. not. And it all comes down to, you know, what they believe in Boston, and, you know, what their medical staff and their training staff believe. And I wouldn't want to be in their shoes right now.
I mean, the problem is, I don't think they could trade him at this point.
Oh, no. Like, not without knowing. Yeah. Absolutely. No.
Well, I just don't think anyone takes that big of a deal with if that's the production you're getting back.
I would agree. That would be ludicrous. Like, who would do that?
Right. So, I mean, it feels wrong and dumb to say they're stuck with him, because there's a non-zero chance. As you said, he comes back next year and he resembles the Gordon Hayward of old. But, I mean, I remember coming into the season, I said, let's give him till January. You're like, no, it might take a full year.
Yeah.
I thought he'd be rounding back into form by now, and he's shown flashes of that more so in recent weeks than he did early in the season, but he's still a ways away.
Well, I mean, his ankle twisted.
I know.
I don't think we can realistically put ourselves into his position and go, oh, when is the confidence that ankle going to return to 100%?
Right.
Because first of all, foremost, yeah, it needed to be rehabbed. It needs to be put in place and rehab, because that is off, like you mentioned, it's severe trauma to a body part.
Right.
And then comes the entire component of trusting your ankle again.
Yeah.
Like Vince Carter back in the day, I still remember him talking at length about his body, because he felt his body had failed him.
Mm-hmm.
Like his ankles and his knees, all the things. Like, he just felt that his body consistently would just hurt him. And he said it took so long for him to be able to just attack and practice mm-hmm. at a normal pace, because, you know, it's not just games. It's also working out. It's playing pickup games at practice. It's shooting drills at practice when you're just taking a jump shot. Like, when you're going back to the ground after a jumper, like, is my ankle, is my knee, is something going to act up?
Right.
Like, it's in the back of your mind all the time. So, I think patience is just the name of the game right now.
Yeah.
I really think it is. But then, you mentioned we need to be realistic, and you're right, there is a risk factor.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, the good news for Boston is they play Toronto at home tonight, which is going to be a tough game. But after that, their upcoming schedule is just paper soft. It's home against Memphis, on the road against Atlanta, the second day of a back-to-back, which is actually kind of a trap game, because Atlanta, as they showed last night against OKC, could actually, you know, they can hang some points on unprepared teams. So that might be trickier than it looks, but still not, you know, you're not playing a top-tier team. Then five-game homestand, Miami, Cleveland, Golden State, obviously a tough one, Brooklyn, Charlotte, at the Knicks, home against OKC, at Cleveland. So, like, there's a real chance Boston fattens up right now, and, you know, 3 weeks from now, they're third into the East or something like that, and we forget everything we just said here. But that said, the trade deadline's only a couple weeks away, too. They have a bunch of guys who Marcus Morris is going to be an unrestricted free agent. Aaron Baines is hurt right now, but if he turns down his $5.5 million player option, he'll be a free agent. Terry Rozier is going to be an a restricted free agent. Kyrie is going to turn down his player option. In theory, said he's going to re-sign, so I don't think they move him. Do you think they need to make a move by the deadline to kind of get rid of this glut of talent, as ridiculous as that sounds?
Yes, absolutely. Look, depth is important, obviously, but you need to consolidate talent into something greater.
Because
as we've seen in this league, talent wins out.
And
top tier talent wins out.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need to get closer to that mark. And you need to find something that you can trade later on for Anthony Davis if that's who you're going for. And remember, you cannot trade for Anthony Davis now because Kyrie Irving is on the roster, so he has to be included.
Yeah.
All right. So Marcus Morris is in a contract year. He's playing balls out. I mean, 15.5 points, 6 rebounds in 27 minutes, draining 45% from three, 87 from the line, almost 50 from the field. He is, just offensively speaking and from a versatile perspective, out of this world. I don't think that's going to continue at all. I think this is a trap year, a contract year, and next year is going to be a trap year.
Yep.
So and Terry Rozier has just... I mean, I don't think he's going to be the guy that a lot of people thought he would be.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like he does well in this bench role at all. If there is a team out there still high on him, they should definitely see what they could get for a package of Rozier and Morris and I don't know what else. Maybe a pick or something.
Because they have four. Especially, potentially.
Yeah, that's the... Right. And here's the thing. Like, certain picks they shouldn't move because they could end up being pretty high.
Yeah.
Like the Kings pick.
Right.
Because if the Kings miss the playoffs and gets, like, the second pick.
Yeah.
Like, that goes to Boston.
Yep.
Right. But this is not the year to have a lot of draft picks because this draft is not good.
Right.
So this is the year you should be able to trade your pick without any future consequences. So if you build a trade package surrounding Marcus Morris, Terry Rozier and draft picks. See what you can get from that. I'm not sure what you can get. I don't have a guess sitting here waiting, but that would consolidate a lot.
Ready? I'm going to solve the NBA in two trades.
All right. Yes, go for it.
Dennis Smith Jr. to Orlando for Aaron Gordon. Or Dennis Smith Jr. And Wes Matthews to Orlando for Aaron Gordon.
Yeah.
Terry Rozier, Marcus Morris, and whatever, a pick. Fine, whatever. To Phoenix for TJ Warren.
Oh.
Boom. NBA solved.
Well, all right. So
maybe you probably don't even need to throw in a pick, but if you need to, throw in Boston's pick.
So you'd want a TJ Warren, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, all and Gordon Hayward four-man wing rotation.
I mean, ideally, I would.
I don't hate it.
I would steal Mikal Bridges, but I don't think you're getting that.
No. I don't hate that at all.
Yeah. Boom. NBA.
I mean, because Tatum can swing up to the four. TJ Warren can swing up to the four.
Yeah.
Jaylen Brown can play two and three.
Those guys are just interchangeable, basically.
Yeah, and Gordon Hayward can play all the two, the three, some four. At least healthy right now is you don't really. Oh, and you would get that scoring punch. And TJ Warren can get to the line, man.
Yeah, that would give Boston the one guy who could actually get to the line.
Right. I don't hate that. All right. Yeah, I'm down.
Thank you.
Oh, wait a second. I just looked. You know what? I was wrong. TJ Warren does not get much of the line. I was remembering him back in college.
Oh, okay. Well, he still shoots. I mean, he's shooting almost 43 from three right now. He would just.
But that's the one year he's done it, though.
Yeah.
It's a sample size of 39 games.
I know. I think his contract, if I'm remembering right, it at least descends next year. Yeah.
It descends next year
and then goes back up. So that would help them because they're going to be. Once they repay Kyrie, and if Al Horford opts in, they're going to have some money concerns anyway.
I don't know if this trade pushed them over Toronto.
Yeah, probably not. I don't know. I mean, like, I think if they just live up to all the talent on this team, they're at least the second best team in the East. They've just been so dysfunctional all year.
I guess. I just look at Toronto and Milwaukee as major threat right now.
Yeah, I do too. I think those are the only two threats to Boston, with all due respect to Philly and Indiana.
I was absolutely certain Boston would make the finals this year.
Yeah.
You know, that could still happen. I remember my predictions that Boston was going to win the championship this year.
I know.
I don't feel great about that right now.
Me neither. I was just as high on Boston as you were.
Hmm. I think we can... I think it's a good deal, you know, from the parameters, but I think we can do better.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, I think they need to do better.
Yeah. Either way, I'm with you. I think shopping Rozier in the next couple weeks, if you can get something for him. I only chose Phoenix just because, you know, they're the two teams that actually need a point guard. But, like, if someone else wants to buy low on him, by all means. But, Rozier clearly wants to be a starting point guard. You're not getting rid of Kyrie. Rozier is going to leave this summer. Just get something for him now.
No, or you know, what's the alternative? Match, you know, you want to re-sign him? Yeah, no.
And then go in crazy into the luxury tax?
Exact. You know, I'm going to go on a limb. Terry Rozier is gone by the deadline.
Yeah.
Gone.
I think it makes sense. And honestly, it sounds like a lot of Boston fans are ready to say goodbye to him. Like,
Yeah, it does seem that way. People like... Marcus Smart a lot more, and to Smart's credit, like, he's become a 35% three-point shooter.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
it's like, thanks for the memories last year, Terry, but goodbye.
Yeah.
All right, let's wrap things up with the Chicago Bulls, who are reportedly holding Robin Lopez hostage, according to Chris Haynes of Yahoo Sports. They are adamant that they will not negotiate a buyout with him. Lopez's representation has been in discussions with the Bulls front office about an exit strategy since late December, apparently, but the franchise intends to stand firm. If they do change course and reach a buyout agreement, he's going to the Golden State Warriors, apparently.
Right.
So, Mark Stein, I saw, tweeted... he in his newsletter yesterday, someone tweeted at him, like, are the Bulls just not doing this so they protect the MJ dynasty? Like, do they just not want to strengthen the Warriors and, like, let them dethrone MJ as the greatest dynasty in NBA history?
I mean, if that was the case, they wouldn't have sold Jordan Bell to him.
Right, exactly. And Mark Stein was like, no, actually... They were just doing this for leverage, because like, if you signal that you're going to give this guy a buyout, no one's going to give up anything for him.
Right. So they got 2 second-round picks for Justin Holiday.
Right.
And I think that gave them a little bit taste of blood.
Yeah.
Because they realized, oh, you know what? We actually have a few vets who can, you know, be positive assets elsewhere.
Right.
And they're not in the long-term plans for us. Let's see what we can get. I don't think you're going to get as much for Robin Lopez because his contract is significantly larger.
Mm-hmm.
So you also that's more difficult to move and find assets. Like, Justin Holiday's cap hit was, you know, $4.4 million or thereabouts.
Yeah.
It was very minimal. Lopez sitting on, I think it's like 12-point-something, 13-point-something.
Looks like 14.4.
Oh, it's just 14.4. See, there you go. That's a significant chunk of change.
Right.
And then you would have to take salary back. So here's what I know. I know the Bulls are not interested in taking money back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not just for Robin Lopez. That also goes for Jabari Parker.
Mm.
Like, they're not interested in taking money back long term. That's the issue we really should be talking about. Because I think what the Bulls holding on to Lopez is fine. They, after the trade deadline... You know, obviously you can't conduct trades, so there you'd have to, you know, work a buyout and to get him off the roster, and, like, you just do right by him that way.
Right.
But I think that's the wrong way to look at it. You should actively go in and say, you know, hi, Washington, like, you want Jan Mahimi's contract off your books?
Right.
Like, give us Troy Brown.
Right. Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah.
I mean, how many times do we have to say it? If you're a bad rebuilding team, take money back. Take long-term money back. Because the free agent market is not going to help you. Like, Chicago's not... No matter what Chicago does on the free agent market this year, they're not going to be a playoff team next year. Do you agree?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, maybe they will because they're in the East and, like, everything outside of the top five teams are pretty terrible. So, like, sure, they could sneak in as the 7th seed or the 8th seed next year. Maybe. But, like, whoop-de-doo.
I have a question for you, specifically. All right. So, you know how Washington, they are, we've talked about Washington so much on this podcast, especially their clock cap, right?
Yep.
Would it be worth giving up this year's draft pick, which right now is slotted as the 6th pick in the draft, unprotected, to get rid of Otto Porter and Jan Mahimi's contracts?
If you're Washington?
If you're Washington. Because then you can trade those two guys for Jabari Parker and Robin Lopez, and you'll you'll get those contracts off the books by the summertime. Is it willing to give up that? Should they be willing to give up that draft pick? No Troy Brown. The only asset that the Bulls get from this
is the number 6.
Is the draft pick.
And knowing that the draft class is somewhat top heavy, or very top heavy, as it seems.
Very top heavy. I mean, you could look at it as well, because Otto Porter is obviously a good player.
Right.
So you'd have to put that into the consideration as well, but you would be trading for the contract. Yeah. Or for Washington's perspective, you would trade away the contract, because that's a lot of money.
The problem is, for Washington, that would probably make them a worse team as well.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, that said, it'd be very tough for them to catch any of these other bad teams.
Right, and that's part of my thinking, too.
Yeah, but with the lottery odds the way they are, you're giving up a somewhat decent shot at... I mean, if it was the old odds, you would have a much lower shot than you would of moving up. So, like, completely unprotected, probably not.
Top one?
Yeah, like top one or top three, maybe.
I don't think the Bulls do it with the top three.
Yeah. Well, they're still getting Otto, though, who's actually a valuable piece.
But still,
contract.
From a league perspective, overpaid, right?
Yeah. Oh, for sure, yeah.
So, I think that's an interesting debate. I think that should be the discussion. Like, instead of looking at trading Robin Lopez, like, in a singular trade,
right.
I think it should be a larger trade where you see what you can actually get. When you actually go out and say, look, we have Jabari Parker, who's earning $20 million, and we have Robin Lopez earning $14.4 million.
Yeah.
We can give teams $34.5 million in not immediate cap relief, but in cap relief for the 2019 offseason.
Yeah.
But we want a pick back that projects to be high.
You know what's going to be funny?
What?
When they trade Robin Lopez and Chris Dunn for John Wall.
Oh, yeah. Look, he's a name, so obviously.
Right. What, four-time, like, five-time All-Star?
Right. Oh, the former... We just got another former first overall pick.
Yeah,
that's right. Essentially getting another... Yeah. No, but like, are we in agreement that that should probably be the way to go?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think, again, if you're Chicago, there is no reason you shouldn't be willing... I don't know that you need to be willing to take, like, a contract with, like, 3 or 4 years left on it, but those are very few and far between. If you're taking Ion Mahinmi, who I believe expires after 2019-2020...
Correct.
Who cares? Like, you're not... It doesn't matter. All of your guys are young enough. Like, Markkanen's in the second year of his rookie contract. Wendell Carter Jr. is in the first year of his rookie contract. Zach LaVine's locked in long term. Chris Dunn's in the second year of his rookie contract, and you're not sure that he's the answer at point. But even still, you'll have plenty of time to figure that stuff out before you have to re-up all of those guys. So it's fine to take one more year of dead salary if you're getting another, like, significant asset, as you said. Regardless of what that pick is, if it's a very lightly protected pick, and it could be number 3, number 4, number 5, where there's actually some talent in this draft, yeah, I think that's a move you make.
I think that's the way they should look at it. But right now, it seems like Lopez is being treated in a very singular vein. Like, oh, we need to figure out a trade just for him.
Right.
I think I think they should just do it completely different. Open up the entire field and just go, okay, we have a group of guys that we just know or we're not going to move.
Yeah.
Like Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter.
Right.
And in my perspective, that's it. Like, the list ends there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have all these, you know, expiring contracts that we can move, and we should just be able to take, you know, crap contracts back for assets. I just cannot see a downside to that, because like you said, they're not going to be in the playoffs next year. In particular, if they hang on to Jim Boylan,
yeah,
who's been a train wreck.
Right.
I mean, right?
They could sneak in, but like, I don't think it...
By posting up all the time?
No. God, no.
But that's what they do.
I know. And I mean, I guess depends on if Kemba stays in Charlotte, they'll still be relevant. The Nets are only going to get better. The Heat will be fine. Like, none of the top four
there's
teams.
There's no way the Bulls are getting to the playoffs in the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
No.
By the way,
if you read The Athletic, mm-hmm, and Stefan Noh, who's mm-hmm just a tremendous Bulls beat writer, go check out his article about why Lauri Markkanen has stagnated. Spoiler alert, Jim Boylan.
I'm shocked.
Yeah, shock too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean...
7 feet tall. Go into the post, Lauri. It doesn't matter if you can shoot the three at high volume and a high percentage. Go into the post. Come on, Lauri.
Oh, my Come God. Come on, Lauri. Yeah, I mean, if nothing else, they're not going to be a meaningfully competitive team for another 2 or 3 years. Like,
right,
they could sneak in the playoffs because the East, but, like, they're going to get swept in the first round and it doesn't really matter. Mm. So... like 2020 is where they should have their eyes right now. So if they take on bad salary next year, that's fine. That said, if you're expecting the Bulls to handle trade negotiations proactively and intelligently,
yeah,
Godspeed.
That is a very fair point.
Yeah. All right, I think that's a good place to wrap up. So thank you everyone to listening today. We will do most likely a awards pod somewhat soon, as well as some updated playoff predictions now that we're halfway through the season. We're just going to wait for a few slow news days, which never happen because it's the NBA. Until then, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
Thank you, Brian. You too. I think this podcast made us the greatest of all time.
Oh, no. We will not be discussing that, because thankfully I missed that in Japan, and it sounds like I missed a horrible few days on Twitter.
Might be very wise not to go into that one. Take care, man.
You too.